literally told him again now.
No?
No, we are recording again now. I'm recording.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, because you're just too much of my delay.
What are you... Right. Hello and welcome to tonight's September edition of Everybody's Got One, the greatest podcast in the After Dark Podcast Network, yada, yada, yada. And tonight, it's Nick.
Why is it called Ego now? Can we change the name of it again?
No. Yeah. We've all got egos, and everybody's got one, an arsehole. And we've got...
Can we call it Take Two?
This episode can be called Take Two. Take
Not
this.
Much. Take this in the ass, motherfucker. And we've got Mr. Miller in the corner, my brother from another mother.
Howdy doody.
Howdy diddly. And then we've got Ryan, the nicest boy in podcasting. And he is a boy because his PE teacher used Facebook when he was in school.
Yeah, evening. Thanks for that, yeah.
Right, so let's just cut this, right? So far, we've talked about Stuart's daughter being at a festival and being talked about the birds and the bees with her best mate who stayed over last night and he's got to go and get her in a bit. We've talked about soggy biscuits. Ryan's drinking Blue Moon because he's a real man, and me and Miller are absolute knob jockeys for just drinking soft drinks, but Miller's got a good excuse. I've got no excuse. Craig hasn't gone and got a drink, but he also hasn't recorded the first 10 minutes of us fucking recording the podcast either. So, absolute liability.
I free recorder. Maybe it's a reason it's free. I'm going to buy some recording software this
we'll
week.
Buy some. As of tomorrow night, when we record this after dark, if we record it tomorrow night as we're planning to, we're going to double end it. I'm going to teach everyone how to double end it, and that's not a sexy term. And that means that everyone's going to sound good, and we're not going to have any more of this kerfuffle about crappy recording.
That is an underused word.
Kerfuffle. I love it.
Yeah, kerfuffle. We should all use kerfuffle in our next podcast recording.
Or you and could all... just rename Ego Kerfuffle.
How would you type that into a computer?
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. Let's forget that idea that existed.
Half of our listeners are illiterate.
Half of the people on the podcast are illiterate as well. If you listen to most of our garbage.
Now, how's everyone's summer gone? Ryan,
yeah,
you haven't gone away. You've worked all summer.
I've had a shit summer, yeah.
Why?
I guess I say I've had a shit summer. It's been lovely weather. I live on the seafront, so I can't really complain. There's a lovely pub just around the corner where I can go and sit and enjoy a beer in the summer afternoons and evenings. I've not gone on holiday, no. My holiday's coming up in October.
And I've just booked us on, Nick, to talk Halloween Horror Nights.
Oh, super. Nice.
Because Ryan wants the willies put up him, apparently. And I said, if there's anybody who can put the willies up him, it'll
you.
Be me and you.
It's definitely you. You was definitely trying to put your willy up me. I didn't go away.
Where did you go?
I didn't go. I kind of didn't. So my family went away on holiday, and I didn't because I was waiting for a date for something to potentially happen in my personal life, which now is probably not going to happen for a long old time. So I sent my family away for a week, and then we spent 5 days in a little town called Dymchurch down in Kent, like a little sleepy seaside town. Which
is this your sex operation where you become Nicola?
Correct, yeah, that's the one. Why not? So I did spend a little bit of time away with the family, but not as much as I would have liked to. And I've not, really not had a proper holiday. Dymchurch's only a couple of hours away. So though it's a seaside, it's not really much of a break. But like Ryan said, we've been quite lucky in that the weather we have had here has been pretty good. So we've been able to go and do stuff out locally. But... a proper holiday has not been had.
I didn't even know there was a place called Knobchurch. Was it Knobchurch or Knobcheese?
Yeah, sure, whatever. Yeah, why not?
And Mr. Miller?
We got a last-minute deal to mainland Spain, Costa Almeria. We weren't going to go anywhere. Long story short, because Michelle got over her cancer last year, we did the America thing, went to Florida. Threw a load of money at that we couldn't really afford. as a once-in-a-lifetime thing. And we weren't going to go away this year, but when you go into work and you hear about everybody's booking their holidays and where they're going to, you get a little bit jealous, don't you? And think, oh, sod it, we'll have a little week away somewhere. So we booked a little week in Spain as the heat wave was hitting. So we were like 35, 37 degrees every day.
So were we.
I know, that's what, yeah. So you spend all that money on a holiday to catch the sun, and it was bloody warmer back here.
To be fair, yeah, that was a lucky thing. They went down to Cornwall, and I mean, the week they went down, I think they had one half day of rain the entire week they were there. Otherwise, it was really, really good weather.
This is the end of the. This is the end of days, mate. This is the world ending, and we're all getting a suntan.
I don't know though, because like I get really hot in general. So
because you are hot,
I mean that's what it is. I think you're right. So, but I'm in an office where there's aircon. I'm in t-shirt and shorts basically from February till I'm back from Florida in October, and I have to go to London occasionally. And when I go to London, I have to wear jeans, shoes, shirt, you know, and it's just an absolute fucking nightmare.
Do you wear like 1980s footballer shorts so that you can have a little fumble under the desk?
Exactly. Yeah, I do actually. Sometimes I whip them off and just sat there just completely butt naked from the waist down because nobody can see.
Lord Luke's like that. Lord Luke sends constant Snapchats of him with his chest rug on display with unicorn piss coming out of his eyeballs.
Ryan, if there's any dust going at your office, let me know. Craig, I know you definitely went away.
We went up to the Highlands again.
Traditional.
To hunt some haggis. We're like the Queen. She's in Balmoral and we're in Brora.
I thought you was at Balamory.
Everybody's in Balamory. I can't remember the words. Balamory.
What's the story in Balamory?
Yeah. Wouldn't you like to know?
literally every episode of that shitty show I saw was, whoa, PC Plum has lost his shoe. That's all that happened. PC Plum, the most aptly named.
Who gives a shit, love?
Yeah.
I was in the alehouse in Brora and we were talking about Balamory and we were working our way through who we would do. And that was...
It's quite a short list, isn't it?
Was it the girl in the wheelchair for you?
Yeah, definitely for Craig. He likes that.
No, it was the owl woman who used to push around. I can't remember her name. No, Edie McCready.
Oh, Edie McCready.
Yeah.
She was a fox here, mate.
She's probably like a parrot, isn't she? Am I thinking the right person?
She
looks like a parrot.
Yeah.
And then the one who was dressed in yellow, she got replaced.
Did she? Oh, yeah, Josie Jump.
Josie Jump, yeah.
Oh, Josie Jump.
Yeah, they found out the first Josie Jump couldn't actually jump.
She's probably in a crack den somewhere now in Glasgow, sobbing, with their Josie Jump doll.
Well, of course, the interesting fact about Balamory, there is an interesting fact, is that Archie the Inventor was played by now pretty famous comedian and writer Miles Jupp.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. He's brilliant as well.
Yeah. Yeah, he's always been brilliant.
Robert on that show.
Absolutely.
Archie didn't invent shit.
He hated being on that show. But I think he said, like, it paid for his first house.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the thing when you're in the entertainment industry is that you often have to take jobs you don't like just to get the bills paid, which, of course, explains the BBC One game show Don't Scare the Hare. Because, I mean, who in their right mind would sign up to, you know, do a game show like that?
Never heard of it. I must be on a different planet
to you. To be fair, though, he was getting paid to get a mortgage and he didn't have to wear any pants.
That is true.
Well, when you say he bought his first house, was it the yellow one or the blue one?
The bright pink.
Yeah, he bought the car, so he lived.
That's a proper place, isn't it? Is it?
Yeah, it is.
Tobermory, Mori, I think it's called. Tobermory,
yeah. Yeah, we keep threatening to go, but it's like a 3-hour drive and then a ferry. And the ferry's like a one-eyed Scotsman with a fucking rowing boat.
Yeah, you're a Scouser. You love fucking ferries, don't you? It's all you sing about.
Did Archie live in a windmill or am I just thinking of Jonathan Creek?
Yeah, no, I was in the castle.
Yeah,
wasn't
you think of Jonathan Creek.
Oh, yeah.
He lived in the Kingsmill Mill. Where they make all the Kingsmill.
Is that true?
No, of course it's not true. I just made it up. But bless you for entertaining the notion that anything that I said had some truth to it.
Everything on this podcast is fact.
Especially about
I've got a massive willy.
Damn it. I mean, what can we say now if it just says everything's fact?
And a taste of Wrigley spearmint gum.
Oh, a bit of juicy fruit's more likely.
Yours
Hubba Bubba Cherry for me.
Did anybody ever like that, the red flavour Wrigley? I can't remember what it was called now.
Cinnamon. There was a cinnamon one.
There was, but it was...
The American one's my favourite. The Big Red. That's my favourite American
Big
gum.
Red. It was called Big Red. Yeah, it was a cinnamon flavour gum. I could never... I think because I'm so used to minty flavoured, like, sticks of gum.
How would Jonathan Ross say that? Wed Wiggly. Wed Wiggly. You can't say Wiggly like Jonathan Ross.
Wed Wiggly. Like, the thing Wed is, like, I can't pronounce my R's. Like, I've got a... And this is... Like, I can't pronounce my R's properly, and it goes back to my childhood, because my dad would always take the piss out of me for not being able to pronounce my R's, so I got very conscious about it. So I try really hard when I talk to cover it up. If you listen to me on podcasts, every now and again, you'll hear me do a Jonathan Ross impression where I've not been thinking about what I'm going to say next, and it slips out. So
nice one. Way to make me feel bad because your dad abused you when you were little. Fucking hell.
Yeah. Don't worry, that's a whole new podcast coming soon to the Off Dark Network. Nick's family issues.
Bloody hell, we can make a whole series of it. I'm slightly concerned.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be more than one episode. I'll be in therapy before you know it. I know we've got an agenda here, but because we're talking gum, right, and a few people already kind of said it, but what is your ultimate gum? Like, if you could have any kind of chewing gum from any period of your life, what would you go back to?
Oh, Hubba Bubba. All right, as a teenage boy.
You're a Hubba Bubba, like just standard Hubba Bubba, or was you like a blueberry Hubba Bubba, or a strawberry or cherry? What was your...
Was there a Coca-Cola Hubba Bubba?
There was, yeah.
They still make Coca-Cola Hubba Bubba.
Did they really?
Yeah, see, cherry was my go-to Hubba Bubba, but they don't make that one anymore. But you can still get Coca-Cola and strawberry.
I used to be blueberry Hubba Bubba, which is funny because I don't like actual blueberries, but blueberry Hubba Bubba was my kind of thing, but not actually my choice.
So you can blow a Hubba Bubba into a bubble, take it out your mouth, and then put it on your helmet like a little hat.
Well, the more you know.
Come on, we've all done it.
Ryan.
Someone at school, actually on the Hubba Bubba, someone blew a Hubba Bubba bubble, literally took it out, lobbed it, it got stuck in someone's hair, and for the next 3.5 years, he was known as Hubba Bubba Kid, for the whole school.
I love stories like that.
That was only 3 years ago, literally Ryan's 12.
It was last term.
Fucking hell.
So Ryan, are you going to stick with cherry flavour Hubba Bubba?
Yeah, oh man, it was just amazing. I used to love that stuff.
Stuart, what was your go-to? You going to stick with Big Red or...?
Well, no, Big Red is my favourite at the moment, but going back, probably stopped making them while you were having gum, was called Double Bubble. Round ones, you can get them from...
We don't want to know about your sex life. We're just asking about you.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Bazooka Joe's.
Ah, Bazooka Joe's, the little comic bit.
Little comic inside, yeah.
Yeah. Right. This is why I asked the question, right? Because mine is mine is really left field now, listen to everyone else's, right? If I could go back in time, and in fact, I don't even have to go back in time. I could go upstairs, right? Because.
Climb, get on your warship, go on, put your tights on.
My ultimate gum, if I go back and have any gum, is the little pink Topps bubble gum you used to get in a pack of trading cards.
Oh, yeah.
I know the ones you do.
I mean, they tasted like nothing else. And I recently met up with an old friend of mine, and he gave me about 15 packets of random 1980s trading cards. And some of them are Tops, and some of them have sticks of gum in them, and they've been completely unopened since like 1981.
Open one now and see if you die on the podcast.
I'm proper tempted. I won't do it on this podcast. I'm proper tempted to do like a Facebook Live video or YouTube video on the network. opening up a pack of cards, showing a pack of cards, and eating a 30-odd year stick of gum.
Just I had see. Loads of them gums. I had loads of them because I used to collect all them Topps cards.
Oh my!
Garbage Pail Kids. Star Wars.
I had the first ones that I really got into were like Batman, the Batman film.
Yeah.
And Turtles came out about the same time. And
89 and 90.
Yeah, 89 and 90. That was my top time to be buying.
Like, that was a man.
Topps cards.
I was born.
Six.
Stuart was on his second wife by then. That's how old he is.
Thomas Chelsea's the second one.
I was being made.
You're just bouncing around in your dad's ball sack.
Do you remember them Garbage Pail Kids cards?
I remember the movie.
He made a cartoon of it, didn't he?
And a movie.
Oh, really? Didn't know about the movie.
The movie is absolutely... Like, after this... before you go out, Stuart, after you've left this podcast... YouTube the Garbage Pail Kids movie, find the trailer. You can probably find the whole film, but see the trailer. It is the scariest thing you've ever seen in your life.
Really?
Oh, it is messed up. Absolutely messed up. It scarred me as a kid. I don't know whether Craig or Ryan know. Yeah.
Little cartoon characters of like old people's names, but like Stuart was Savage Stuart.
Mine was Sick Nick, I think.
Sick Nick, that rings a bell, yeah.
It might have been like Krusty Krieg or something.
Yeah.
I wish you got no idea what you're talking about. The first cards I remember is Pokemon cards.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Garbage Pail Kids. So, just to give a bit
I've
of
heard
insight,
of them.
Right, so what happened was, in like 1984, there was this massive pop culture explosion called Cabbage Patch Dolls, or Cabbage Patch Kids, right? And they were these really weird-looking dolls. They look like, in a way, cauliflowers, hence the name.
Yeah.
And they were, like, super popular. So Topps did this line of stickers called Garbage Pail Kids, and they were basically just taking a piss out of the Cabbage Patch dolls. But they all had weird names.
Did they have these in America, do you reckon?
Yeah, it's where they come from.
Because it's all over the news. They were, as soon as they were going to stores, they were getting people were buying like 10 at a time because they were that rare.
Yeah. Like they, I mean, both Garbage Pail and Cabbage Patch were huge all over the world. It wasn't just the UK thing.
Like Care Bears.
Ryan, definitely look up Garbage Pail Kids. Like the art is amazing. They use them. Anyway, Craig, you didn't want to have this episode about sticks of gum from 1981, so.
I didn't, but you know what? Who cares? Fucking knock on, Tommy.
Let it go where it goes.
Yeah, let's just let it go. Let's all just get our knobs out now and slap them on the microphones. See what happens. You ready?
Three, two, one.
There you go, girls. That was for you.
You lucky people.
Hang on.
What was that? Is that someone having a stroke?
That's my tiny one.
Oh, bless.
That's all it makes.
Put a lazy band round it.
Yeah, it's what I need to do. It's how I impress the ladies.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to talk about arcade games. It's going to be a double-header, this show. Probably next month we're going to talk about video games on the consoles, but this one, I just wanted to get into people's heads, to see what games they remember, the misspent youth from what games you used to play in the arcades. Yeah.
Ryan, I went to an arcade in 2001.
I'm the oldest. 47 yesterday.
Oh, happy birthday.
My first recollection of going into an arcade was a machine called Gorf. G-O-R-F. Yep. And I take it by your silence, you know nothing about it.
Why don't I go?
I'm googling it frantically now.
Is it an Atari game?
It was like
G-O-R-F.
Similar to Space Invaders, but the alien ships moved around rather than just going side to side.
Yeah.
1981.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Because on the top of the road where I lived, there was a row of shops, and the greengrocers, obviously, for them to get a bit of extra money, they had a back door into their shop, which led into like a little lean-to, and they had three or four arcade machines in there that they used to let everyone go in and have a little play about, extra income for them.
It's proper bizarre, isn't it? Because I remember similar setups every now and again. Like, when as I got older, I noticed them. But it's weird, isn't it? Because now you barely see an arcade machine. And if you do, it's specifically in where it should be, an arcade.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, there was a newsagent down the road to me that used to have a few arcade machines in it. There's a kebab shop that opened up the back, and in there stuck about six machines in there. Just madness.
It was just easy money for them. Because, yeah. I mean, today, the queue was out the door.
Today, just today, actually, on that, I walked past a milkshake place in the town I live in, and there was an arcade machine in there. And I thought, what perfect timing for this episode. I've never seen an arcade machine in a place like that before, and it was amazing.
There you go. Not Shakeway, was it?
No, not Shakeway. Come on.
Too much for your town.
The other machine in the screen grocers was called Scramble. Remember that one?
Yep.
Side-scrolling, shooty and drop bombs.
Yep.
And the aliens, that was... there was three.
Focus playing right now.
Was that cool?
Yeah. So I'm just leaving it playing. Just carry on talking.
So when you clear the level of golf, your ranks progressed up to ranks. Like the very best, which was, I don't know, Lord Admiral or whatever. But all the old kids, all the cool kids, were dead good at it, and we were all the young ones just trying to get in, but no one was there.
It's basically Space Invaders, isn't it? But he's got a shield.
Yeah.
And they break away and fly down in different directions and things.
Well, I mean, until Pac-Man came out, like, that was the popular type of arcade game, wasn't it? And so you got a lot of those kind of games, because, is it Galaxian?
Galaxian, similar thing.
That's the one I was thinking of. That's the one most similar to Gorf.
Galaxian. Yeah, because they fly down towards you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, you got a lot of arcade machines at that time that all had the same kind of gameplay, because Space Invaders was this absolute juggernaut.
Yeah, they were either drop-down or side-scrolling, weren't they?
Yeah.
I'm actually looking at some old games now, and I'm just like, oh, God, yeah, I don't remember that now.
I love going to play the Scramble one specifically, that also around the same time, they brought out a portable one you could have in your own house, a little tabletop one called, I think it was Grandstand or maybe Tomy. I think it was Grandstand. A tabletop Scramble.
Yeah.
And like, you had your own little arcade in your house. It was amazing. So I got that for Christmas and it just didn't see me till February.
You were fucking rich. You were minted.
I got
a box of cornflakes in 1981 for my Christmas present.
Was a toy?
Box of cornflakes.
Was a toy?
No, it was empty. Oh. Just a box.
Use your imagination.
Well, the first game I can remember was Rampage.
Mm. Oh my God!
Oh, what a game!
What an absolute game!
Good game. Shit film.
I haven't seen the film yet.
I didn't even bother. I mean, 99% of The Rock's movies are dog shite.
Oh, no, I disagree. I absolutely love The Rock.
He plays the same character in every movie.
Yeah, that's all right. I'm all right with that.
The Rock? Yeah. I love The Rock. He's one of the few men I'd marry.
No, I wouldn't marry him. I mean, I'd let him do me.
All right. So The Rock turns up at your house now and says, "Yo, Nicholas, man, I'm a multi-billionaire and I want to marry you."
How did you find The Rock? Because, I mean, that sounds just like he's on the phone.
Thank you. You're going to go, no. What if he didn't want to put anything in you? What if he just wanted to cuddle you?
That's fine. I'm all for that. If he comes to my house and says, "Can I marry you?" I'll be like, "All right, then." Sorry, love. I've got a guy who rocks ass, who's put a rock on it. But I'm pretty sure it's not going to happen, so I don't have to think about that actual situation. But, you know, thanks for the idea. So when did you first play Rampage then? When did you first see Rampage?
It would have been in a video shop / sweet shop in 82, 83,
84. No, later than that, Rampage was about 86, I think.
Was it?
Yeah. It wasn't, it wasn't as early as that.
Okay, well, around that time then. The 80s is a belay now. But you would go in, put your name down to get a video out, because that's what you had to do in the old days.
Yeah.
Hiya. Have you got the babes, please? Oh, no, it's out. But we'll take your name, 50p for the video. Then you'd get some sweets, and you'd go on the arcade machine. And sometimes, because there'd be a queue, because all the videos had to be back by 4 o'clock.
That's right, so yeah. Wait to see what was coming back.
Wait to see what was coming back, to see if your film come back. And then you'd be like, "Ah, yeah, has Ghostbusters come back? No, it hasn't come back. But it's 4 o'clock. No, it hasn't come back yet, mate." And you'd have to stand.
It for another night.
Yeah. Well, can you ring him? Can you just ring him, see if he's keeping it for another night? Oh. And he'd ring. Yeah, he's keeping it for another night. Oh. Boss. But, that's where I did the game playing, because I wasn't really allowed to go into town on my own with my mates and rip it up.
So, it's a stupid question, obviously, but who was your character of choice?
I just mixed and matched, I think.
Oh.
I always went the werewolf.
Oh, interesting. I think that's a lot about your character that you went for the werewolf.
I remember there was three characters. There was the King Kong, there was the werewolf, and I can't remember what the third one was.
It was a lizard. It was like, because basically...
A lizard,
was,
yeah.
Yeah, Godzilla, King Kong, and giant wolfman, for no apparent, because they couldn't think of another big monster. So they were like, wolfman, we'll make him big. So, yeah.
I was non-conformist.
I was always George, who was King Kong, because I was obsessed with King Kong as a kid. So...
Did you play Donkey Kong Jr. then and all that? Game and watch?
Not really. And I don't want to turn this podcast episode into let's teach Ryan how shit life used to be, but I'm going to anyway. Because I think Ryan needs to know how hard we had it, right? So you heard that story there from Craig about hiring out videos.
Right. Come on, I was still about when Blockbuster was a thing.
No, but this...
Yeah, but Blockbuster's had 10 copies of everything.
Right, and this is the thing, Ryan, right? Because until like the 90s, well, actually, it was probably like the mid-80s, right? But you couldn't go and buy a video. If you wanted to watch Ghostbusters, you couldn't go down to HMV and buy Ghostbusters. You could only buy a lot of films. You could only rent films. You couldn't just go and buy the newest releases. And if you wanted to buy a copy from the video shop, because some video shops would sell them, they would charge extortionate amounts. So, and this is how I know, because a family friend, when it came out, bought Flight of the Navigator, right? Now, you all remember that.
Quid.
£85 he paid for it.
Fucking.
For a VHS.
Bloody hell.
Right? Because that's because you couldn't buy them. Right, you had to pay, and I mean they charged that much because obviously the idea is that the video shops would rent those videos out hundreds of times, they would make their money back easily. But that's why they cost so much money. And it was only, I think it might have even been when they decided to release Star Wars publicly in the mid-80s, that was the time that videos then started to get kind of more commercially available to actually buy for the public. But yeah, like for a lot of time, like the only way you could see films was either going to the cinema, renting the video, or waiting for it to eventually come on TV in some edited format. None of this streaming malarkey we're lucky to have now, or as Stuart said, when you said about Blockbuster having 10 copies, like what you miss out on now. Right? When I first started work, like when I was about 17, 18, on a Friday night, finishing work, popping down the high street, and trying to get one of the new copies of the new releases from Blockbuster. Because if you didn't get there and get one of the only of the 10 copies they had of their Saying About Mary, you were left with some absolute dog shit.
Dog shit.
If you got to Blockbuster after like snappers. 6 o'clock on a Friday night, you were left with dregs.
Dregs.
You know how lucky we got it now with Netflix.
Oh, it's great. I did use to lie Blockbuster, actually.
I did. I missed the fact that you had that option available.
It was but Blockbuster
didn't have any arcade games in, though, did he?
Nah. No. It was a chain. They didn't need to. It's all the other mum and pop ones.
Did you have Video City?
No.
We had Video City in Liverpool, and then when that went bust, we had Video City 2, which was quite clever.
Right, we've gone bust. We want to start a new business. What should we call it? How about number two?
Yeah.
It's like the main shopping centre in Liverpool called Liverpool One. There's a Liverpool store, sells all Liverpool stuff, called Liverpool One. And Everton have opened up their store. What have they called it, Craig?
Everton 2. And it's in Liverpool 1.
Oh,
nice. I mean, so you've got a shop called Liverpool 1, and then a few doors down, there's a shop called Everton 2.
So it just looks like a football score.
Yeah.
That's genius, but also asking for some kind of arson attack, isn't it?
Well, it is Liverpool, so yes, it is. It's exactly
what it's asking for. There's a shop just further down the road called West Ham Nil. So shut the fuck up.
So my first memory of going to an arcade, and I remember it so clearly, was 1987. My parents had gone to see the film Blind Date, starring a then little known actor called Bruce Willis.
Mm.
And I was left with my great aunt and uncle to fend around Southend. And they took me to an arcade, and I remember playing Buggy Boy and Star Wars. And both of them, I think the reason why I might have played other stuff, but the reason why those two machines stick out is because they were both sitting cabinets, which is something you don't get enough of nowadays. I mean, Star Wars in particular.
Sitting cabinet, so were you enclosed in all that?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, you know, so you stepped into the cabinet. So there wasn't like doors that you had to kind of get in. So it had like a canopy over the top and other than, so you could stand at the sides and you could look in and see everything like, you know, like perfectly well. But the idea was that you kind of walked into it and sat down and started doing it. And Buggy Boy, I was too short to play. So I steered whilst my great uncle was doing the pedals for me. And Star Wars, you just had to... Do you remember the old Star Wars one where you had, like, the red crosshair?
Yeah.
And it was all, like, vector graphics.
Yeah.
It looked amazing. Yeah. So, and you was, like, doing a Death Star run. So that one had no pedals, so it was all right. I could play that one. But, yeah, I still remember it. Like, I still vividly recall it. And I must have been, like, 87, so what was I? 8, 3, 4... It's only 4, but I can still remember it. And yet I can't remember what I had for dinner last week.
What are your thoughts on the Tron game? Because you're a massive Tron fan, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. I mean, I never played it till I was much older. I never saw one in an arcade till I was much older. But, I mean, it wasn't a particularly good game. The Light Cycle game was quite good because there was a few different Tron arcade games, weren't there? Yeah. But
I was thinking about the one where you actually sit on the bike thing.
Oh, I don't
know. Cycle, is it?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever played that one. The one I played, you used to play the character of Tron and you was trying to like throw discs at people. It wasn't very much like
the early one.
Yeah, the one that was a stand up cabinet. But yeah, it was very much of its time. I mean, you used to get a lot of games at that time based on films which were absolutely shit and had nothing to do with the film. I know it was an arcade game, but E.T. being a prime example. I don't really rate that. The Tron games they've made now, the more recent ones, are actually really good. But, yeah, the one they made for the first film was pretty shit.
Shocking. Yeah.
So, come on, Ryan, you must, being a young whippersnapper like you are, what are your arcade games? Because
Fortnite.
I will say this, I do not like Fortnite.
I don't like Fortnite.
I do not like... I'm more of a PUBG fan myself. I'm really fortunate because I've grown up, as I said earlier, on the seaside. I have a pier in my town. Brighton's only one like 20 minutes away from where I am as well. So Brighton Pier's got a load of great arcade games. Worthing Pier, which is where I am, also has had great arcade games since as long as I can remember when I was a kid. Whether this be the first arcade game I've played, probably not, but the one I remember is Star Wars Racer Arcade, simply mm-hmm. because if you got to sit in a little pod racer and you had the controls like either side, and it was actually like you were pod racing.
Yeah.
And that scene, when I went to see that movie, that was like the best scene in the entire film for me. And to actually sit in a pod racer and actually it's moving with you as you're kind of like thrusting forwards and you're turning and everything. It's just amazing.
I mean, I only played it for the first time in years, about a month ago. And I can categorically tell you, you're looking at it through rose tinted glasses. It's absolutely dog shit. But,
I'm sure at the time,
you're probably spot on, because that was one of the, and I mean, let's be honest, that was a scene put in the film just to shift toys, but
it remains
one of the best bits of an otherwise awful film. Sorry, Craig, but it is. I can understand why. And to be honest, like, the cabinet now, because it looked like you were getting into one of the pods, looks incredible. Like, still holds up. It's just the game looks like an N64 game. Because it was.
But it was an N64 game, yeah.
It was an N64 game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I had it on the N64 as well.
Yeah, I remember now, because Anthony had an N64.
I think it was on, I think it made it to all those consoles at the time. Like, I think it was like I don't think it was on PlayStation, but it might have been on PlayStation 2 when that came out. And it was definitely on Dreamcast, because that was more powerful. But, it's a funny old machine, that one.
It was so much fun. Like, it's one of those experiences. Like, you're basically experiencing a thing from a film you can't do anywhere else.
Yeah.
So it was so good. But, yeah, I used to go to the arcades quite a lot as a kid, because, yeah, I'm literally like a 2-minute walk from the pier right now where I am. So I don't go there enough, really. I should, because it's just around the corner.
Like, you should put your phone number out, and you can give out hand jobs on the pier.
I don't think that's what he meant, if I'm honest, Craig. Yeah,
I just said I don't live in Brighton.
But then you can make money to pay on the arcade games.
That's a good point.
That's a fair point, yeah, it's a fair point.
I said in the group chat that what I do like, because I only live about 20 minutes on the train to Southend.
Southend?
Mate, I can't help it, all right? I've been hanging around Cardi people today. So if I've got some spare time when my wife and kids went away the other week, I spent one of the days that I had free, I took a day off work, and I went down to Southend and just played arcade games all days. It was brilliant.
How much is an arcade game now?
On average, about £1.
For one go?
Yeah.
Gee whiz.
Some machines are like 50p, but yeah, I mean, it's been £1 for, I'd say, about the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah, I'd say so.
It's not a new price.
One of my favourite... One of my new favourite ones is the Mario Kart arcade game. That's pretty good.
My son loves that.
It's good. You get to put your little face into the game as well.
Yeah.
With your little Mario Tash.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd like that.
His eyes light up when he sees that machine.
It's amazing. It's good. Yeah. Really good fun. It's two-player as well, isn't it?
Yeah. Normally, because my kids are both still quite young, my daughter wants to play it, but she can't reach the pedals. And my son just likes looking at it. So we'll take one each on our laps and race each other. And it's great fun.
It is really good. It's such a good game.
And actually, they do Mario and Sonic at the Olympics as well as an arcade machine.
Oh, really?
And that's one of those ones. There's a couple of them down Southend. It's one of those ones a bit the dancing mats.
Yeah.
So you've got, like, the pad you stand on is sensitive, so you've got a couple of joysticks, but the rest of it is done with your feet. So when you do like a 100-meter dash, you've got to run on the spot. Or if you're doing trampoline, you've got to jump when it tells you to, that kind of thing. And again, my son just thinks it's the most hysterical thing.
That's amazing. So they are really good fun. I really need to go to them more.
When me and Craig started going oldies together, we used to, you know, the arcades around the pubs abroad or in the airport or wherever. There was one particularly one, I can't remember what holiday it was, but it was Sega Saturn, Sega Rally Championship.
Yeah, would have been.
We came back and bought the Sega Saturn because of it, didn't we?
95, that would have been.
Yeah, sounds about right.
And it was Sega Saturn. Well, it was Sega Rally Championship, but there was also Daytona.
Daytona. Do, 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 do. Like, still, a lot of arcade machines. Sorry, a lot of arcades still have Daytona arcade machines in. And you know you're in a good arcade when you hear that bellowing from the far end of the arcade. You can't even see it. You just hear it go, Daytona! And you're like, yeah, this is all right. I'm going to hang about in here for a bit.
Well, me and Stuart own both them games on Sega Saturn. And you can play them games and you can have perfect laps. But try as you might, when you went into the arcade, there was no way you could beat it. The time would always run out. Yeah. To the next checkpoint. When back in the house, you were lapping it and doing amazing times, and you knew every corner and every chicane and everything. But when you got to the arcade, you never quite made it.
But
please insert another coin.
There's two reasons. Yeah. There's two reasons for that. So the first one is that you've got to bear in mind that both of those, even though they were Sega games, Sega arcade games, they were conversions. Like the Dreamcast. Funnily enough, the Dreamcast was actually used as the inserts of a lot of their later arcade games, like Crazy Taxi. So Crazy Taxi on the Dreamcast is an absolute arcade perfect conversion because it's the exact same software. But when you had Daytona and Sega Rally on the Saturn, it was kind of converted and kind of downgraded. So firstly, it wouldn't have played exactly the same as the arcade one did. But also, the timings probably would have been slightly out on the arcade machine because, like Stuart said, it was a way of trying to get you to put more coins in. Because you're sitting at home, he wants to keep you sat there at home. But in an arcade, it's just trying to generate revenue.
Yeah, so frustrating.
Yeah.
But they were cracking games. And there was a footy game as well in the 90s.
I know which one.
International Superstars of Soccer.
No. In the arcade, you're talking the Virtual Striker.
Oh, Virtual Striker.
Which is an awful game now when you look back on it, but I can't even think about the amount of money I put in those machines.
That was great, that game.
Especially if you need a cheat to get the big heads.
Would that have been out on there, Sega Saturn? Virtual Striker?
Virtual
Soccer?
I definitely had on the Dreamcast.
Kickoff is the one I used to play around that time.
Kickoff, yeah.
The best one was Sensible Soccer. Sensible World of Soccer was the king. Kickoff was Kickoff was like Vauxhall Conference to Sensible World of Soccer's Premiership.
That was an amazing game. I used to get the mates round to the house, and you could customise your teams, couldn't you?
Yeah.
So we'd all get like half an hour to customise your team and put all your different names in, and then we'd have little tournaments. Oh my God, what an amazing game that was.
You'd do a diving header, and they would dive for about 10 feet, because they would just go sliding after they've headed the ball past the pitch. It was beautiful. Oh. But yeah, Virtual Striker was, you know, back then was good, but, you know, when you started getting proper FIFAs and International Superstar Soccer, they were much better games. But at the time, Virtual Striker was the football game to play. Absolutely.
I'd say I had two phases in my arcade life then, and that was the mid-80s in the video shop, basically, and then the mid-90s on holiday with Stewie.
Yeah.
And then that's it. We might have had a couple of days in the late 90s, a couple of nights, me and Stuart with the girls going into arcades that sprang up in Liverpool. But it was never a big thing. So I couldn't tell you what's in arcades now. I wouldn't know.
I'm just conscious of the time because I know Stuart's got to leave relatively soon. So looking back, Stuart, what would you say is your kind of ultimate arcade machine of all time?
Oh,
nice. If you go back and play like
It hasn't been mentioned yet, and it's still a franchise now. And I'm just trying to remember the name. Virtual Fighter, is it? With all the different, the drunk Japanese guy and all them. Is that Virtual Fighter?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yeah, I was quite fast to play that one, yeah.
That and Tekken were like the two main 3D fighters.
Tekken was PlayStation, wasn't it? And Virtual Fighter was Sega.
Yeah, but both were in the arcades as well.
Street Fighter 2 for me.
I mean, Street Fighter 2 was the first arcade beat-em-up I ever played. And I loved watching people play Mortal Kombat, but I couldn't play Mortal Kombat because the controls are too awkward. But Street Fighter, the beauty of Street Fighter was you could play on that machine and normally someone would try and challenge you while you were playing it. Yeah. And even if you weren't great at it and you didn't know all of the moves and combos, you still had a chance of winning.
Yeah.
It was a fairly equal game. If you knew how to do like fireballs and dragon punch and stuff like that, you were more likely to like really succeed. But you could get away with not knowing any moves and just being a bit lucky.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Just throw a random Hadouken.
That's it.
Shadouken.
Does anyone remember Killer Instinct?
Yeah, they re-released it on Xbox One a couple of years ago.
Yeah. And
it was really good.
It was one of those games where, again, I couldn't get into because I didn't know how to do all the special moves. But watching people play it and get like 70, 80 hit combos was just incredible.
I've got to say, do you think if you were given the opportunity to play your classic arcade game now, you would be able to?
Yes.
Because you think of like Chucky Egg on the Amstrad and all that. And if you try to play that now, it's dog shit. You just don't. Do you know what I mean?
Would you
play?
Yeah, absolutely. Without a shadow. So there's a thing.
No, I think.
Go on to it.
I was just saying, I think we've had this conversation in the previous one. I got bought for me the retro Atari box. And I was like, oh my God, amazing. 50 of the classic arcade, of the Atari games. And it was on about 10 minutes, and I packed it back up and told it to take it back.
The thing it's is, just though, the, I think...
It's with, just the nostalgia.
No, so the thing is, I think you're not comparing apples with apples, because Atari games and Commodore 64 games and Amstrad games and all that kind of stuff are not the same as arcade games. Arcade games were always generations above what you were playing at home. That was the appeal. If you could play like the exact same arcade game at home, you'd have no need to go to an arcade. And that's why arcades nowadays, you know, are kind of a dying art, because consoles at home are so powerful that they can't really do much other than like throw gimmicks in there, like, you know, being able to sit in a driving seat or, you know, sit in a cabinet with light guns. You can replicate it at home really easily. So at the time, arcade, you know, in the 90s, arcade machines were still much more advanced than your home consoles were. So you can get a thing, I'm sure Ryan knows about this as well, you can get like things like MAME, which recreate all like 90s arcade machines. And you can play them at home, you can play them with like unlimited coins and everything like that, so you can finally complete some of the games you never had enough money to do in the arcades. And they are still, most of them, a lot of fun to play.
Yeah, my uncle actually, he bought, I think it cost him a couple of grand, and he bought one, and it's like a big square thing, and there's like controls, there's lots of all the different kind of formats you have in the arcade around each side. And there's like, I think there's like 500 arcade games on there, but it feels like you're playing like the actual, obviously they're all installed on the machine, and it's incredible. It's so good.
That sounds boss-ta.
Yeah,
it's really good.
You don't have to pay that much for it. You can get them if you're willing to play with it on a joypad. You can get them for about 100 quid.
Yeah.
Hundreds of games, and they are all the arcade, like the arcade ports. So they're they use the actual software that was in the arcade machines, because obviously technology has advanced to a point now that what was once impossible to replicate at home now takes up a few like megabits of data on your computer.
Yeah.
And they are, they're incredible. And they still, like, even graphically, they still look good. They don't look as good as, like, a PlayStation 4 game will. They don't look as realistic, but they are not your Atari or Commodore 64 games or anything like that. So I think you're right with those kind of throwback consoles, there is a limited kind of repeatability about them. But I think with the arcade games, I don't think you get that problem.
I think you're right there about when you're talking about the arcades kind of losing their appeal. And even I think some of the gimmicks are, they're finding it difficult to overcome. I mean, I've got PlayStation VR, and they've got this incredible shooting game on it. I think it's called Farpoint or something like that. And you've got the gun attachment with it. So you're in VR and you're moving with the gun, and it's, you can't be that in an arcade. Like, that's much better than any experience in an arcade right now. And yes, PlayStation VR isn't the cheapest kit in the world, but I think gaming, as you said, is advancing so quickly that they are becoming a little bit obsolete, which is a shame.
I mean, I got a VR yesterday from birthday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it's, oh my God, isn't it? It's blown me away. I've always been, a couple of years ago, I said to my missus, oh, I'd love that. And she said, oh, would you? And then I thought, no, actually, no, I don't want it. It's a waste of money. I'd play it for a week, and then it'd sit in a cupboard gathering dust. Don't ever get me one. So she got me one yesterday, brought us a box, and I thought, oh, no, this is a VR. So I opened it up, and I went, listen, Michelle, honestly, thanks very much, but it's a waste of money. Just take it back. And she saw her ass slamming around in the kitchen, so I thought, I'm going to have to keep it. Opened it up, plugged it all in, and oh, my God, what an amazing bit of kit.
Which one did you go for?
Oh, which game?
Which type of VR was it?
Oh, I don't know. She said it was £200 in Argos.
I wonder if you can get the game on it. Go for, try and get Super Hot. It's one of the best VR games I've ever played.
Super Hot looks incredible.
It's so good in VR. It's like you're in the Matrix.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it looks incredible.
I just went on the PlayStation Store and downloaded some free demos.
Yeah,
and there was the Call of Duty one where you sat in a fighter plane.
Yeah.
Oh, I was looking down at my legs and my arms and everything. I was looking around. Nice. It was all, you could see all behind you and everything. There's also
so Super Hot's on the PlayStation Store.
I would
definitely. It's the best VR game I've played. It looked, graphically it looks shit, but when you're playing it, it's literally like you're in the Matrix. It's amazing.
Yeah, the whole kit's blown me away. Every game I've played on it, it's like, oh my God, why has it took me so long to get this?
Yeah, it's awesome. But I agree. Resident Evil scared the shit out of me.
Oh God, yeah.
I've just seen people play it. That's enough for me.
Honestly, surely Halloween Horror Nights can't be that bad.
No.
Well,
no, it's not.
I spoke to Craig about it when I first played it, and I said it's just like walking around Halloween Horror Nights.
Yeah, it is.
Because you walk around a corner, someone jumps out at you.
Yeah, I was literally sitting there sweating the entire time I was playing it.
And it's so weird as well, isn't it? Because the thing is, you know, when I've done the VR thing, I've played a few demos of stuff, of like various different types of VR, and each time you do it, you know it's not real.
Yeah.
But yeah, after a few minutes, you just get accustomed to it, and that all kind of goes out the window. So I did one that was like a roller coaster. And at first, like, oh yeah, this is like a really good gimmick. And then after a while, I actually felt like I was going up and down.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Yeah. And like, well, I usually play it with headphones on as well. I think that really like ups the experience because you can't hear anything in the room. So you're even more drawn into it.
That's what I don't like about it.
Oh, really?
That's the thing. I've told this story, I think, on this podcast before, but I was playing Dead Space. And I wasn't.
Is this the one where you had your knob out?
That's right. I was playing Dead Space.
The dog was licking you.
There was nothing to do with Chappie. And my missus was watching Desperate Housewives in the next room. And I used to have, before we had kids, the spare room used to be my game room. And I was sat there in a beanbag chair playing Dead Space in the dark. And she creeped in while I was playing it and just went boo. And I jumped out of the chair. And I started shouting at her, and I reduced her to tears. And I was shouting at her because I was so scared.
Yeah. Dead Space is great.
Yeah, and I felt so guilty because obviously I wasn't trying to upset her. She just scared me so much. And it was that thing, like now, like we both look back and like laugh about how funny the whole situation was, but it was funny for neither of us at the time.
Yeah, I played Resident Evil around a mate's house. I took my VR out there. We were taking it in turns, had the headphones on, had the VR headset on. So that's the problem, you can't see anything. And because my mates are all dicks, like, you know, like, every now and again, just out of nowhere, they'd like grab you and just be like, and you'd be like, oh, fuck!
well, another good thing I found out about it was the Tottenham game on today. I've got Sky Go on my PlayStation. So I put that on and watch it through the VR headset. And it's like you're watching the match in a cinema.
It's great, yeah. You can watch amazing. Any movie, can't you, as well? It's brilliant.
You can watch 3D films like that, I'm sure, as well. I'm sure if you watch 3D, you can
so you can watch that on the couch.
Yeah.
While she's watching something else.
Oh. Yeah, probably could. I should change the AV channel over.
Oh,
yeah, you can, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
You could be watching porn, pretending to watch the match. Well, why is he watching
VR
Tottenham
porn
with a fucking ad on?
You can get VR porn.
You can, yeah.
VR porn's quite fun.
What, Nick?
just like that.
Have you fucked a melon?
Yes, that's exactly what I did.
No, right, ladies, I've had the text off my door, so I'm going to have to shoot.
All right.
Go ahead, lad.
Nice right, one, see you next time, guys. Thanks for the lads.
Ta-ta-ta-ta-ta.
Anyway, you can Google that in your own time, because I'm not talking about VR porn now, but...
That's a whole different episode, I think.
What I was going to say earlier was that I remember going to the arcade a couple of years ago, and they had like a banner outside saying that they had a new machine, and it was a Batman racing game. And I was so excited, because like you don't really get many big... You don't get many new releases in arcades now, so obviously they're making a big thing about it as well. And they've since... Across, because Southend's got quite a few arcades, so a few of them now have got the same machines. But they're really fun, and it's a racing game. But you like the aim is that you're shooting stuff as well. So it's a little bit like, I suppose, a 3D version of like Spy Hunter or something. But you can choose like all these different Batman vehicles from the films and TV series. So you could have like the 66 Batmobile. Or the animated series Batmobile, but you can also have like the Batman Forever Batmobile, or the Dark Knight Rises Bat, or the bike, and it's like a lot of fun. But like you don't get those big ones anymore. And I was in the group as well. I mentioned the other day about the latest Star Wars arcade machine, which is probably about 2 or 3 years old now, called Battlepod. And when I heard it, I mean, Battlepod sounds like an absolutely terrible name for anything.
Yeah.
So when I first heard it, I was like, this is going to be shit. And someone said, oh no, I played one, like someone in America had played it first, obviously, because they get it from it first. And he's like, oh no, it's like really good if you can find one. So I looked online to where I could find one, found my nearest location, which happens to be Southend. And it's the best arcade experience I've had in years. And it's another cabinet you walk in, but this one actually has doors. So you do have to walk into this cabinet, and you sit in this chair with like a joystick and a thrust stick that kind of goes backwards and forwards to speed up or slow down. And you choose from like a range of scenes from Star Wars films, and they're all like flight scenes or scenes like that. So you've obviously got Death Star battle, you've got blowing up the Death Star in Return of the Jedi, you've got speeder bikes in Return of the Jedi, you've got Hoth, and you just kind of recreate one of those scenes in the film. But because it's the shape of the machine, the screen is a bit like a dome screen. So like what you were saying about the VR, like it just takes up all your vision.
Yeah.
And it's so good. And it's the most realistic Star Wars game I've ever played. And there's been quite a lot of Star Wars arcade machines, and there's been a lot of Star Wars like home video games that have tried to replicate things. But this is top notch. This is like by far the thing. And so the thing is, that's the only way that arcades can survive, is by doing things with these gimmicks. But I just think it seems to be such a dying market, unless it's a seaside kind of place, or it's a big American chain like... Dave and Buster's, isn't it, is the American chain that has like lots of arcades, but it just seems to be a dying thing. And I really hope that we're not seeing the end of it, because we've already seen the end of pinball machines.
Have we?
There's one company that makes pinball machines now.
Oh, isn't that sad?
Since the year, I want to say like 2001, maybe. They'd gone from like four pinball machine manufacturers to one. So every pinball table made now that you've seen in arcade is made by a company called Stern. And like you used to get in like the 90s and stuff, you get loads of licenses. So like when Tron Legacy came out, there was a Tron Legacy pinball machine. There was a Ghostbusters one when the Ghostbusters film came out, Family Guy, Elvis, all that kind of stuff. So they make all these licensed pinball machines, but they're all exactly the same. And that's I don't like their machines. And the thing is, I love pinball. There's a good app. I can't remember what it's called now. It's called Pinball something. Not Pinball Museum. It's like that. And this company was created, and their vision was to recreate all of these old classic pinball machines, but like so you could play on your iPad or your PlayStation or whatever. And they're brilliant, but it's not the same. It's still not the same as playing the real thing. Even though it looks exactly the same and the mechanics are supposed to be realistic, it's not the same as being in an arcade and playing one.
I remember always playing the Addams Family one with the light up blister.
What a machine!
So good, isn't it?
With the if you got really good at it, the thing hand would come out of the box and grab the ball.
That's right. Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. That was such a good pinball machine.
That pinball machine was so popular that they re-released it for the Millennium. They did like a new version of it. Yeah, they released they basically called it like the Gold Edition or something. And so suddenly you started seeing them in arcades again because they'd remade these machines. It's brilliant. There was a few tables that had like gimmicks like that. There was a Street Fighter one, I remember, where there was a car, and if you like, it was like obviously like the bonus stage where you got whatever. But when you did it, you had to hit the pinball into this like die-cast car, and you had to beat the car up like you would do playing real Street Fighter 2.
That's cool.
And like little gimmicks like that are great. What was the other one? Hook, I think, was the other one I played quite a lot. I want to say there was some kind of similar gimmick like that where maybe like the hook grabbed the ball. I can't remember. But the thing one always like stood out.
That machine was so good because I don't know whether it's still there, but they have one on Brighton Pier. I used to play a lot.
I can't remember. I've not been to Brighton Pier for a few years now. But
see, this is all just foreign to me. Just.
What, Brighton
Pier? I'm too old. Yeah, no, just arcade games.
You must have played pinball machines, though.
Which? What?
You didn't play any pinball machines?
Yeah, I did, yeah. But they're just not out there anymore. There's no I don't even think there's any arcades in Liverpool. Honest to God, don't know. So sad.
The only places you tend to still find arcades are seasides.
Yeah, literally on piers.
Yeah, sad.
I mean, Southend has, it's a weird setup because most of the beach that's there, like in mainland Southend, is taken up by a theme park. So they've got this quite large, I mean, it's not a theme park, it's a theme park in the loosest sense. It's like a permanent fun fair, but the rides are better than a fun fair. They're more modern and more, they're better made than fun fair rides, but you know, it's not exactly Thorpe Park. So you've got that along a lot of the beach at the start of it. And on the other side of the road is just like lots of arcades, one after the other, pub, chippy, wimpy, arcade. And it's like that. And it's like all these different arcades as you're going to go down. But, you know, going back to the lack of like new machines, most of them have the same machines in them.
Yeah. Shame.
You know? You get some that have got, you know, there's one that has more older machines in it, has like a section, so that's more of like a retro arcade. But most of them will have, you know, whatever the newest machines were at the front, so like the aforementioned Batman or maybe that Star Wars game, or The Walking Dead did a shooting game recently. But that's it. You see a lot of the same machines in the same arcades. So I spend most of my time trying to win cuddly toys to the kids and get told off if I do win them for having too many cuddly toys. But I do love a grab machine. So.
Yeah, they are good fun.
Let's not forget that if it wasn't for the arcade, we wouldn't have one of the most popular TV shows on terrestrial TV right now. In
Walking Dead.
The Ben Shepherd hosted Tipping Point. I had the misfortune of watching that again today.
Is that the 2p machine kind
that
of thing?
That is. They've, like, somebody sat there in an arcade and went, oh, this 2p machine's quite fun. How can we turn this into a game show? And that's what they've done.
Yeah, I think I've seen that once and it was shit.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah, I was completely ironic when I said that.
But it's just so bad, isn't it?
I don't even think they have those kind of machines in America. I've never seen one anywhere.
No, I've been to, I mean, the only arcades I've been to in America are the ones in, like, Disney's hotels.
Right.
I've never seen one in there.
Did you ever go to Disney Quest?
I did, I think, once when I was a kid. But that was it. Again, it never really appealed to me that much because it got so old so quickly. They would have succeeded massively had they just kept adding new experiences to it, but... I'd rather have Disney Quest than an NBA experience, that's for sure.
Yeah. But see, I mean, I only did Disney Quest once, but when I did Disney Quest, it was... The problem with it was all the arcade machines were free play. So what you did is you had people hogging the machines because they didn't run out of lives.
Yeah, because you just pay for a ticket and that's it.
Yeah, so you'd be waiting ages. I never saw it anywhere else. There was a... It might have been called like Justice League or something, but it was a side-scrolling beat-em-up like Final Fight or Streets of Rage or something, but with the DC characters in. I've never seen it anywhere. Cool. I was like, oh, this looks great. But I stood there for like 10 minutes waiting for a turn and got nowhere near. So I just gave up and played something else instead. But that's what I mean. Like, you know, that is a shame because that was, you know, probably one of the biggest arcades you could find anywhere. And it's now being replaced with a basketball restaurant.
I guess it's popular in the States, but I don't know. I feel like they've missed an opportunity to not add something cool there.
Yeah, but if it's that popular in America, why did it close down at City Walk?
Well, yeah, this is it.
Because it's not popular in America anymore. Right, let's wind this arcade chat up and let's move on to more pressing things. What you think?
About?
I was going to say, what?
This is the most bizarre conversation.
I'm building up the tension. What do you think about the opening 4 weeks of the Premier League season?
I'm going to stop recording now because I'm recording the podcast, so I can hit stop at any time.
Why are you being like that?
You know, I'll go first because I have to go first. I'm a West Ham fan, so it's been absolutely abysmal. They've spent
What has gone wrong at West Ham?
They've spent the most money they've ever spent at any time, not even a summer transfer window, but just in general. They spent over 100 million quid in the summer on new players. They've spent God knows how much money getting Pellegrini in, and it's just not working. They were an average, just slightly below average team last season, which led them to sack their manager and to buy a load of new players. And yet, for the first time in 11 years, in fact, the last time that they lost 4 games in the opening start of the season, they got relegated.
And who is your next fixtures? Because that is the real...
It's ramping up. We've got Man U, Chelsea, Man City. It's something stupid like that.
Everton, Chelsea, then then Man U, Brighton, and then Spurs.
I knew there was some tough games coming up, although Spurs got chumped out to Watford today. So it's not good. They really need to start pulling their finger out their arse. I am worried. But, I mean, at the same time, I'm not saying I'm worried, but I don't obviously want to see West Ham get relegated, but I'm long past the age now where if they get relegated, I'll be crying about it.
Yeah. Totally. You know what I mean? There's just more things going on.
Yeah.
But looking, I mean, you don't generally turn up against Everton at Goodison Park. Chelsea normally spank you. Man United always spank you. Brighton will probably spank you. Tottenham are definitely going to spank you. Leicester will spank you. Burnley is your first hope of any points this season, and that's the 3rd of November.
I think what you'll start seeing is a load of draws. Everton, I reckon, will pull a draw out against them. Chelsea, it's a weird one. I think they might start up in finding their groove, so I think that one will be a loss.
Man United, how'd you do on the telly?
Mixed.
Because you're kicking off against Everton at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, so I presume you're on telly. Chelsea, you kick off at 1:30 in the afternoon, so you're definitely on telly. Mm. Man United, you're 12:30 in the afternoon, so you're definitely on telly.
Yeah.
Brighton, you're 8 o'clock at night.
What, on a Saturday?
It's the 5th of October. You're the Friday night match that week.
I don't agree with Friday night matches. Ridiculous.
So you're on the telly.
Yeah.
Your next 3 o'clock kickoff is the 20th of October.
Jesus. Yeah. I think Man United we might scrape something. Man United have been a team that we've had some really famous victories, including our last ever game at Upton Park. We beat Man United. So how they're playing at the moment, I think there is a chance of getting points there. I reckon out of that lot, we might see about 4 points if we're lucky. We'd have to be lucky. But it's not enough. It's not a good enough start. But, you know, you look at other clubs around. Arsenal haven't started off well. Fulham haven't started off well. They're just starting to find a bit of a groove. Huddersfield expected to not do well. They're not doing well. So, you know, I think it's going to be an interesting season, mainly because as well, like, there's so much turmoil at Man United at the moment. That's the one that's all a bit weird at.
Well, I predicted in our Premier League preview show, which was the drunk episode of August, I predicted Mourinho would be gone before Christmas. I also predicted the demise of Man United and that they would never win the league again.
Which is obviously clearly bullshit, but
is it though? Because they might be the richest club in the world, but they haven't got the spending power of Man City. Man City are who everybody needs to be wary of, because Liverpool are a rich team. Liverpool can spend a lot of money to a point. Man City can bankroll themselves anytime they want, and the very, very much the same way Chelsea did in the turn of the century when Abramovich took over. They're not spending the money now, Chelsea, because he's not giving them any money.
Yeah.
Man City, it doesn't look like there's any end in sight.
But we thought that about Chelsea, though.
Well, yeah, maybe. But, you know, Liverpool, we won't win the league this year. I'd like to think we can win the league this year. We should win the league this year because we're boss. But if we don't, he'll probably leave and we'll start rebuilding again. And it'll be another 3 or 4 years of building a new team to get it up to a level where we can compete to win the league. Some of the times we've come second in recent years, we've had more points in the bank than the last time we won the league.
So I think what you'll see is Mourinho gone,
Definitely.
Pochettino to Man United and Klopp to Tottenham.
Fuck off, dickhead.
That's what I see happening.
Klopp? Why would Klopp go backwards?
Because the thing is, like, regardless of like what you think, Spurs are a big London club, and big London clubs are what people like to aspire to. If you can't get in to like Man United or Man City, you know, Arsenal or Spurs, even though I don't think are as prestigious really, or they're certainly on the same tier to me as a Liverpool. But they're not seen as attractive. So
no, Klopp would never go to Tottenham. Never in a million years.
Well, not directly about Sol Campbell to Arsenal, but
yeah, but not directly from Liverpool. If Klopp goes anywhere, it'll be to a Spanish team.
Maybe.
Definitely.
The thing is, like, you've obviously had an excellent start to the season, but you've had no competition.
Well, this is the thing, right? People are already saying, oh, yeah, Liverpool are going to win the league and all that. I haven't done any homework whatsoever, but I would like to see the four teams we've beaten at the start of the season. I'd like to see how we played against them last season. And I've got a feeling we probably scored more goals than we have now. We've scored 9 in the first 4 games. And we've conceded 1, which, had that been Karius, did that cock up yesterday, he would be all over the back of the newspapers, portrayed as a clown, and he would have been vilified and hung out to dry.
He's been vilified because this is the second week in a row he's tried to do the same thing. And the first week he got away with it, and people were like, I hope he doesn't try and do those kind of things too often. And in the next game does the exact, not the exact same thing, but he does and tries to do another bit of pointless skill. And this time he got caught for it.
Dickhead. Absolute dickhead. What was he thinking?
Well, he was thinking he could show off.
Yeah.
And why he's got a dribble as a goalkeeper, God only knows.
No.
Proof it out.
The Alan Hansen, when in doubt, put it out. He would just put his foot through the ball and get it as far up the pitch, hopefully out of play, so everybody can regroup and get into position. What was he thinking, trying to do a fucking Johan Cruyff turn? Fucking dipstick.
Yeah. Good keeper, but that's going to cost you this season if he doesn't back up his ideas.
He should have had the rocket up his arse last week. When he chipped that Brighton fella, he got away with it. 5 minutes later, he nearly got caught. And I think the referee blew up for a foul on the keeper. Yesterday, there was no foul on the keeper. He was just made to look like a fucking idiot. Yeah. But then Klopp basically defends him and makes a joke out of it. Like I say, Karius did it in the European Cup final when he was concussed.
Allegedly.
No, he was concussed. I believe me, medical staff. Medical staff don't lie.
But anyway, I think, you know, we need to see. I think you've got a good chance doing well this season, but I think you need to have some proper competition. The next few games, I think, will give us more of an indication of what we might do. But I think, Europe's definitely a possibility this year.
Tottenham away is our next game. And we don't do well at Tottenham away. It's at Wembley. I think they did us last year.
It still Wembley, though?
Yeah. This was supposed to be the first game at the new stadium.
Because they can't use Wembley in October.
Well, this is the 15th of September.
But I'm just saying, like, because towards the end of September is when they start doing the NFL games there.
Yeah.
Because there were rumours they might have to use West Ham Stadium.
Well, the Carabao Cup, whoever Tottenham have got in that, they were talking about playing in a third stadium, yeah. You're right.
Mm.
So I don't know where they're going to go. West Ham, maybe, as you say. But fucking hell, mate. They're talking after Christmas now for that new stadium.
I'm hearing later than that. I'm hearing next season. There's some issue with the smoke alarms or something.
That's shocking.
Yeah. So whatever it is, it's a major balls up, and they're apparently chucking money at people to do overtime.
That is why they haven't bought any players. Because that stadium will take them down. And I hate Tottenham.
Well, I'm West Ham fan, so of course I hate Tottenham.
Yeah. That's something we're united on. Man United on.
So I think, Craig, the last thing you wanted to talk about was something that we used to do on this but haven't done for a while, which is talk about other podcasts that we
mutually masturbate.
I've woken up now. Hold on.
It's talking about podcasts that we listen to outside of the After Dark Network.
I think, I mean, when you listen to Ryan on his show, whatever it's called, I can't remember that one.
That's brilliant. Well done. Way to insult our guest. Which one?
He's not a guest, he's part of the team.
And actually, he's part of the team. So, like, theme park trader or the customer is always weird.
That's the one. The I'm tired, man. I've been in work all day. Customer is always weird. Ryan has always got a chub on or is never more than 3 feet away from a chub.
I think you're right, yeah. It does seem to be a weird trend for a 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning.
Yeah. There's nothing like a Sunday morning boner with your two mates.
I know. It's very weird. We do sit very close to each other as well, so.
Are you all naked?
Not yet, but I don't know. Maybe once Dan and I have been to Florida, it could be we could come back one Sunday morning and Stu turns up and we're both just sat there ready for action.
Holding hands.
Maybe one for the 100th episode video special.
Yeah, we finally start to use some of the products we've talked about. We get in the 55-gallon tub of lube, get the butt plugs out, and away we go.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd pay good money for that. I really would. Right, I'm going to go to Ryan first. Ryan, what is a podcast that you listen to that is not Disney or anything related that you reckon? You could tell the listeners. Come on.
Yeah, so I listen to the IGN UK podcast. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Do you know who IGN are?
I do.
Yeah. So the US team are a bit... I don't want to say American because it's harsh. But
they are American.
They're like, they are American, but they're really like serious about how they podcast. They don't swear. Not saying that swear for swearing's sake, but they just report on like the news in like geeky culture as it is. Whereas the UK team, and there's a particular three that if they're on the podcast together, it's brilliant. And they're just like three guys from the UK just ripping the shit out of everything and everyone.
Sounds familiar.
And one of my favourite moments was when someone wrote into them and they said, I don't really think that Rey is a very good character in Star Wars. I don't think we should be having female leads in Star Wars movies, blah, blah, blah. And they were just like, I can't remember this guy's name. But they were like, just, you know what, Dave? Never write to us again, you cunt. obviously, IGN's a massive news corporation, really. And they just don't follow the rules that are set to them by the US company. And I think they've got their own YouTube channel as well, these three guys, called Prepare to Try, and they're hilarious.
Nice. Good recommendation.
Yeah, always looking for something new.
Like the Casper Slide Part 2.
Yeah. So come on, Nick.
I'm going to steal your thunder, mate.
Go ahead, then.
My favourite podcast by a country mile right now is the Top Flight Time Machine. It is a football podcast. I mean, that's what they call themselves. They call themselves a football podcast. And they do talk quite a bit about football. But
yeah,
they go off on so many tangents. It's like when me and Craig podcast, or like this episode, really, when we started talking about Gun for no apparent reason. They just go off on these stories, and because they both work in the media, Sam Delaney and
fucking hell, that's embarrassing, isn't it?
Oh,
the Sunderland one.
I was gonna tweet this to them, but I won't now because I talked to them quite a bit on Twitter.
Andy Dalton. This will be gold.
Andy Dalton. Of course it is.
Yeah, the funny one.
I've not even found it yet. I was trying to find him on Twitter, but I couldn't find him. But yeah, it's Andy Dalton. So Andy Dalton, who does Atletico Mints, which is another good podcast that he does with Bob Mortimer. But him and Sam Delaney are just so good together and so entertaining. And the podcast started off as going back through the Premiership since the first season up until like now. And it's a little bit like, I suppose, what the Rock and Roll... Was it called the Rock and Roll Years, that programme, Craig?
Yeah, yeah.
Where they used to look back at the football season and they were playing music that was out the same year and everything like that. So it was
news headlines,
yeah. Yeah, it followed a kind of format like that, but just with a more comedy slant. But when the World Cup hit, they started doing ones about previous World Cups, and now the new season started, they do 2 a week. So they do one that is looking back at an old season, and then they do one that comes out on a Monday after the weekend where they talk about the latest happenings in the football league as it's happening. And they're like, both versions of it are just exquisite. As soon as one drops, I'll stop whatever I'm listening to, unless it's obviously Theme Park Trader or Customer's Weird, and we'll listen to that instead. They're just so, so entertaining. And they last about 40 minutes to an hour. They're not particularly long. But yeah, just so, so good.
Sounds intriguing. I might give it a go.
Yeah.
I
think even if you're not into football, the banter between them.
It sounds like it's worth it just for that. Yeah.
The tangents he goes off on, especially Sam Delaney. Is it Sam Delaney Andy Dawson? Where he's talking about his mate in school going up into the tree and shitting out of it.
and then the
bigger kids kicking his head in because it was disgusting, so they just battered them. I'm going to tell you to go and listen to Atletico Mint, which is Andy Dawson and Bob Mortimer. I've probably recommended it before, but this is this come before Top Flight Time Machine, and it's loosely based on football, but you've got the gangs of the EPL, which is funny in itself. So you've got who's that dickhead who plays for Tottenham? He fucking dives all the time.
Oh, Dele Alli.
No, Harry Kane.
Oh.
You've got Harry Kane. He's the leader of one gang. And you've got Jordan Henderson's in the gang. And you've got to hear it, haven't you, Nick? Really. I'm not doing it justice. But it's like Enid Blyton type on that bit.
It's very, very weird. I went back and started at the beginning because I think there's only about 70 episodes. And they last about half an hour. They're not very long. So I went back to the beginning and started listening to it from one. So I'm not as au fait with it as Craig is. But, I mean, I thought it was a football podcast. It is the loosest, it's even more loose than Top Flight Time Machine. If you know football, you'll get more out of it. But there's so much more around it. I mean, obviously, Bob Mortimer's excellent. Peter Beardsley and his wife impression. Is great.
I'm going to listen to it for Bob Mortimer alone.
That's why I started listening to it. It was when his fishing program had started, and I thought, I really should listen to that podcast. And some episodes is quite football heavy, but as they've gone on, they've got less and less about football. And it's probably why Andy Dawson started doing another podcast, because it wasn't what it started out to be. But on this week's episode, there was a skit, and it is around football, but about the old England manager, Steve McClaren, being at his new club, QPR. And I don't know what's going on at QPR. I didn't know anything about results or anything like that, but they were talking about it. Bob Mortimer had written this skit and made this song about it. And I was in tears listening to it. And someone had animated it, and I shared it on Facebook the other day. One of their listeners animates a lot of the podcast and puts them out as like small animations on YouTube. And I showed her the YouTube thing, and she had no idea. She didn't even know Steve McClaren used to be an England manager, and she had no idea about it. And she was almost in tears herself listening to it or watching it. So it helps.
Well,
Mortimer
just cracks me up.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
She's just genius.
Yeah, it's just so funny.
Two episodes ago, the Beardsley one, where they pull over on the hard shoulder. And, my God, he eats his chicken wraps. He loves his chicken wraps. She loves her hard-boiled eggs and her poachers and her scrambled. And they get pulled over and the police come. They pull over on the hard shoulder so she can have her butties or her eggs or something. And the police come over. And she tells the police that she shit herself. So she's having some eggs to bind herself up. And I'm on this train on Merseyrail, travelling to Chester to do my job. So I've got my headphones on, listening. And I am literally, do you know when you're stifling a laugh?
Yeah.
Like Pontius Pilate, biggest dickus, like that. I was literally like that. Like, honest to God, I have to listen to it again, put it that way. It's gold. Bob Mortimer, I've idolised Bob Mortimer since the early 90s when he was on Vicary's Big Night Out, obviously with Vic. And the man's a fucking legend. It's horrible to think that he's had heart complaints and everything as he's getting older and all that. I fucking love him. I'd lick him from top to toe.
It is very good. And I mean, the best thing about those bits is because he normally writes these skits and he does the voices for them, is that you just hear Andy Dawson in the background trying his hardest not to like really burst into laughter. So you hear him stifling his laughter and stuff. It's brilliant. It is really funny. What was I going to add to that? Oh, like very, very quick story. Which is, I used to know a few people that worked in TV back in the 90s as actors. They were always like bit parts and stuff like that. But one of them, one of the actors, started off in stand-up in the late 80s. He used to work with my dad, and he used to work with my dad during the day at BT and would go off in the evening to like try and do stand-up. And he used to do the rounds in London with Vic and Bob when they were first starting out, before they got their first TV gig. And like Bob Mortimer was just he was just an estate agent by day.
Really?
And he said like, if you talk to him about work, he was so straight-laced and, serious about what he was doing. He said, and then he'd just get up on stage and it would just go all out the window and he'd have this completely different persona. And he said, it was fascinating to watch. And when I was younger, I always thought Vic Reeves was the talent because, he was the more kind of, brash one and everything like that. But really, when you listen to this, or even when you see the thing he did with Paul Whitehouse recently fishing, it's clear that Bob is the genius in the partnership. Vic Reeves can kind of, project it out there, but Bob Mortimer is the creative mind. And I think very underappreciated.
What was the show when Vic and Bob went over to the BBC? The Smell of Leaves and Mortimer.
Smell of Leaves and Mortimer. Oh, my God. Now,
there was two sketches on there. One of them was where Spider-Man comes in on a tricycle.
I don't know. And
the two of them start creasing up. And then the other one is Donald and Davy Stott. And they're interviewing Sting. And the two of them are there, and Bob Mortimer says, "So, Sting, man, do you know when you were on the island and you had the message in the bottle and you threw the message in the bottle, man, did you let a little fart out?" And the three of them just lose it. But they left it in, do you know what I mean?
The main sketches I remember from that were Slade. Home with Slade, which was brilliant.
Needed its own TV show.
Oh, yeah, clearly. And also the bit they always seem to do towards the end of an episode, which is when they were doing Otis Redding and Marvin Gaye sitting on the dock of the bay, watching the ships rolling, they roll out again. And
you know,
they wouldn't get away with it now.
I don't even know if you can get it now.
You can probably find it on the internet. I don't think it's been released on DVD. You used to be able to buy it on video. I know that much. When you could buy videos, yeah. Ryan.
I had them.
Yeah. But I don't know. But they were so good. They were so good.
Most recent thing they did was House of Fools, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. I loved House of Fools.
That was so good.
I won't. Like, the number of people I tried to get to watch that show, because I immediately saw they were doing a sitcom and thought, oh, God. You know, we just had Mrs. Brown. This is going to be dog shit. And I think it was every episode was genius. They had a good cast around them.
Yeah, it was so funny.
Whole thing was great, and yet no one really watched it. It was such a shame.
Yeah.
Such a shame.
And what was it called?
House of Fools.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's worth watching. It's very good.
Do you know that'll be on BBC iPlayer, won't it?
It used to be. I don't know if it still is. I know.
It was on Netflix as well.
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
It was.
It was. I don't know if it still is.
Oh.
Yeah. It had. It was then Matt Berry,
who's really
everything anyway.
He's so good.
Morgana Robinson, who's also really good. They were like the mains in it, but yeah, it was proper. Like, it was definitely their humour. Like, they'd hit each other with, like, objects in the kitchen, and each one would get more and more elaborate, you know, until someone hit them with the kitchen sink.
It was very Bottom-esque, wasn't it? In some ways.
Yeah, I think it was, but I think, I've just been rewatching some of Bottom, and I think it will probably last longer than Bottom. Like, Bottom does, at times, seem a little bit too juvenile, even though I find it funny. But I think some of it's a little bit trying too hard. But I think they got a better balance. So, I'll tell you what, look at that. Podcast recommendations and TV recommendations. What else could you ask for?
You can't beat that, can you?
You can't beat that. Right, come on, Ryan. You know what to say. Just say it.
What am I saying?
Oh, God. Every fucking week, every month, we have these people on. Remember Stewie?
Oh, Stuart was gold.
Come on, Ryan. You know how to end the podcast. Come on.
Three simple words.
You're going to have to tell them to me. I honestly don't know.
Oh, for God's sake. He's one of... What? Oh.
Moo the Pusik. Is that right?
Am I the only one who can do the catchphrase?
He's your catchphrase.
It is my catchphrase. Cue the music. Good days, bad days. Just take them. Love.
I did know the words. I did know the words. Now that you've said them,
oh,
there's a lot going on in my head.